Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kelly, your host. Thanks for being here with us on this Thursday afternoon, or if you're in Australia, Friday morning, and I'll tell you why I mention Australia specifically in a moment. Second hour, Jimmy Akin will be here and we'll do open forum. Your calls welcome, 888-318-7884. This hour, we'll do kind of an open forum, but on a very, very specific topic. We have the director of the Office of Public, I don't know, you better help me out here, Monica.
Hi, I'm Monica Duman. I'm the director of Public Affairs and Engagement.
And that's what I was going to say.
Catholic Archdiocese of Sydney.
Public Affairs and Engagement. And you've heard us talk with Monica before. If you ever watched our podcast Focus, you know about Monica. But we also just talk about how much we admire her here at Catholic Answers. And that admiration is born of the fact that Monica was kind of, people would say to us, you should get to know her because she's this great pro-life leader down in Australia. And then we got to know her and we found out she is a great pro-life leader, but also a very capable defender of the faith in every way. She's a lawyer, but they don't call them lawyers there. They call them barristers or something like that. We're very glad you're here, Monica. Thank you for being here.
I'm so excited to be here finally in person.
Yeah. Why are you in the United States? What brought you here?
You invited me.
Okay. There was that. Yes. I didn't mean to ask it in an accusatory way. Like, why are you here, Monica? But you've kind of toured around a bit. You've seen the country a little bit.
I have. Absolutely. So this is my first time on the West Coast, but I attended the Catholic Media Conference in Baltimore last week, visited a friend in Harvard who's just finished her doctorate, another friend of mine who's a sister of life in the Bronx and who in August, God willing, will make her final profession there.
Beautiful.
The first Australian ever to do so.
Oh, she came, did she come to America to be with the Sisters of Life? Is that?
Mm-hmm. Sister Mary Grace Langrell. Shout out to you, Sister Mary Grace.
Well, congratulations, so. Sister Mary Grace. That's wonderful. We love those Sisters of Life. We've had them in here a few times, and what a wonderful order. Founded by the now deceased Cardinal from New York City, and growing and growing. And that's great. So you got to see a little bit of the country.
Absolutely.
So the rumor here is, and by the way, we're going to talk about the state of the church in Australia. And that's what I want people to, if you have questions about the state of the Catholic Church in Australia, what the pro-life battle is like down there, what the kind of the battle for, I guess just for Catholicism to be known and to be lived is like in Australia. Today's your day to call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I was going to say the rumor is that you don't like American bacon, that bacon is better in Australia.
I was saying today over lunch that the stuff that you serve as bacon in America is what we discard in Australia.
That sounds so snobby to us Americans. That sounds unbelievable. It sounds like a Canadian. You sound as snobby as a Canadian about their bacon. 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. I want to start with a news story from Australia to give people kind of a sense of the position of the Catholic Church there. For one thing, Catholics in Australia make up about what percentage of the population of Australia?
20%.
20%. Okay, so a fifth of the country is Catholic. Recently, a Catholic hospital was seized by the government of Australia, which to an American will sound shocking and terrifying because I think we have this sense that it's coming here. If they're doing it in Australia, eventually it'll get here. So what is this about seizing Catholic hospitals and what does it say about the state of the society in Australia?
Yeah, so certainly. So our national capital, the equivalent of Washington, D.C. here, is a place called the Australian Capital Territory. And Canberra is the capital city in Australia. And it's only a very small place. It has two public hospitals. One is a fully public hospital owned and operated by the state. The other one is owned and operated by a Catholic organization, Calvary Healthcare, which is sort of the formal body of the little company of Mary. And about 6 weeks ago, there was a parliamentary report on the availability of abortion across the ACT, and it criticized Calvary Hospital for its overriding religious ethos. And then on the 10th of May of this year, the government announced that it would just forcibly acquire the hospital, which basically they would seize the land, the buildings, the assets, the operations. They would transfer the staff that were currently working in under Calvary over to public health contracts. And the law passed on the 31st of May. Calvary went to court to try and stop it. But since I've been here in the United States, they've lost that battle. And so on the 3rd of July of this year, the hospital will be forced into state hands.
So in a matter of 60 days, the hospital went from being a Catholic hospital to having all of its assets seized by the state, and it will become a state-run hospital now.
Yeah, absolutely. And they say that, you know, they will provide some form of compensation, but what that compensation will be determined at a later date. So we don't even know if they'll get value for everything that they've put into the hospital or not. It's actually quite extraordinary. Euthanasia is not legal there yet, but it certainly will be probably by the end of the year. And we expect that that will be some of the most egregious euthanasia laws in the country. They're talking about extending it to minors and potentially even those with a so-called completed life, so people who aren't terminally ill.
But they just feel like dying.
You just feel like dying.
Oh, they're ready to go. Wow. So this makes a Catholic hospital inconvenient, though.
Yeah.
In a state or a region or in I suppose in the entire country of Australia, Catholic hospitals become inconvenient if medical care becomes the is expected, or the standard of medical care is that you kill children in the womb and that you take the lives of the disabled and you take the lives of the elderly. Now, those last two with the word voluntary attached, but nonetheless, the culture of death, in other words, Catholic hospitals are inconvenient to it. So they just seize the hospital.
We'll just take it. We'll just take it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the courts allowed this.
They absolutely allowed it.
Wow.
And if I have to say, like, one of the things that we're concerned about is what's next. Catholic schools going to be inconvenient as well. And is the next institution on the chopping block a Catholic school,
right,
that insists on teaching Catholic understanding of marriage or gender or sexuality or something like that?
Well, now, Australia, of course, lost Cardinal Pell. And you were kind enough to talk to us after the death of Cardinal Pell, which was quite sudden. And I know he was a friend of yours and a mentor of yours. Would it be fair to say both of those things?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I wonder before we go to calls, because people do have Americans have a lot of questions about the church in Australia. I don't want to put words in your mouth or things that we talked about before the show. But tell me if my impression is correct that. Your experience is that the Catholic faith is more robust. It's a bit tougher and more robust here in the U.S. than it is down in Australia.
Certainly. Really? I think that's true.
Okay.
I think that you guys just do things on a larger scale than what we see in Australia and have the ability really to rally the faithful. We can certainly do it in pockets in Australia, and I have to say I'm blessed to be part of the Archdiocese of Sydney, where I think we put on a pretty good show, and we had our Corpus Christi procession on the Sunday just passed, and the videos that I've seen made me a little homesick because we had, I think, about 12,000 or 13,000 people show out for Corpus Christi.
That's for an American city, that would be a big deal. If
yeah,
we got
yeah.
12,000 people out for a Corpus Christi procession. So that's good.
It's great. It's great. But in other ways, I think you're just, I don't know, that there's the Catholic identity here. And the ability for Catholics to gather and to collaborate is something that Australians can learn from.
That's very, very interesting to me. Australia, the country of Australia, and the kind of Catholic society within that country haven't had to struggle quite maybe as the way the United States has for certain things. That is, you know, Catholics were. I mean, well, I don't know. You know the Australian history. I don't know it. But in the United States, Catholics, we were the immigrants. We were the unwelcome immigrants for 100 years here between about 1850 and about 1950. It was only after the Second World War that Catholics began to have a strong place here. So that meant 100 years of building up our own institutions, building up our Catholic schools, which were separate from government schools, not funded by the government, building up hospitals and universities and all that that was separate. All of that is, it turns out to be quite useful, even though it's not as robust as it used to be. How does that match up with Australian history?
It sounds pretty much the same. I mean, we were...
It does. Okay.
Yeah. So sort of the Aboriginal and Indigenous culture were on there. We're on the land for tens of thousands of years before the first European settlers in the late 18th century. So Australia's a relatively young country in that respect, but a Protestant settlement originally. And
yeah,
so it was hard for Catholics early on. And then the same thing, the wave of migration, and all of a sudden the Catholic Church became the predominant faith in the country.
Uh-huh.
And still is today, even with 20%, we're still probably... outmatch the Anglicans, which are the next most populous, almost by 2-1.
Oh, I see. So you would be the largest particular Christian expression in Australia, but still a minority of the overall population. Yeah. That's just like the United States, like Catholics in the United States. Protestants outnumber Catholics, but there is no Protestant denomination that's even close to Catholics in the United States.
I'm not even sure whether or not Protestants would outnumber Catholics in Australia.
Oh, okay.
I think.
But there's a lot of nuns in Australia. That is, and you've had that for a long time. There's a lot of irreligious. I don't know what's the word for it. Just people who are not religious. They're not practicing. They don't have a religion. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of that in Australia.
A lot of that. I think the last census was something like 38 or 39%.
Oh yeah.
Of Australians would identify as having no religion. That's not necessarily to say that those people would be anti-religious, but that certainly there's a lack of religious literacy because people just weren't raised in faith, so they don't understand concepts of faith or belief, and I think that's what we're really struggling with, not only sort of antagonism, but also just complete ignorance, which is very hard to combat.
Yeah, it's a real kind of tabula rasa there, that it's just, why would I even be interested in this Catholic thing? It's not within my worldview at all.
Mm.
Okay. I wanted to say thank you. You sent us a nice note. You may not remember this last year about this time, to say congratulations on overturning Roe versus Wade. how did that reverberate down there and down under the American, I would call it a victory, a much sought after victory, a kind of unexpected victory, even for those of us who were in the pro-life movement for decades. How did that reverberate down there, that the pro-life victory here?
I can still tell you exactly where I was. So I'd traveled to the Australian Capital Territory actually for the ordination of a very good friend of mine. It was the Solemnity of the Sacred Heart. And we're all down there for the ordination, and we had the ordination celebrations, and then I got back to my hotel. It was just before midnight, and my phone just started buzzing. You know,
really?
Rose gone, Rose got ready, you know, Rose been
really?
Overturned, Rose been overturned.
And this was Australians
this
who
was
were buzzing.
This was Australians yeah. at midnight on a Friday night, just
how
so
inspiring.
Excited.
Yeah.
Which was just great. And then we came back to the cathedral the next morning for the Thanksgiving Mass of now Father Eden. And the bells were ringing, and it was winter, but it was a beautiful sunny day. And we were just embracing outside. Like, it was just beautiful because not only were we happy to be there for the ordination, but also just the joy that we felt that someone had won a victory and that you guys had done it.
Yeah.
And I think what that's taught me in particular is that wasn't a victory that wasn't won overnight. That was
good Lord,
50
no.
years.
Right.
And there are many, many people who had been involved in that fight for decades who didn't get to see dogs.
They never saw it. They fought their whole lives for it and didn't see it.
Yeah. Didn't see it. Well, at least not this side of heaven, right?
Right.
And that's a real lesson for somebody like me, that you just have to keep going back and going back and continue these fights, because it might not be for me to see these victories, right? It might be just my call to just keep plowing through and to live sort of the 30, 40, 50 years. But then so, you know, please God, a generation yet unborn, we'll see this victory.
Praise God. Praise God. Thank you. It was awful nice to get that note from you. It was such an emotional time here after that. I mean, seeing people that who I had not seen weep before weeping after that great victory. There are lots of folks on the line who want to ask you questions about Australian Catholicism, about the state of the church down there. But there are a couple lines open. So I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take a quick break, let you dial if you'd like to talk with Monica Dumit from the Archdiocese of Sydney down in Australia, a great defender of the Catholic faith, a great defender of life, and a wonderful, articulate model of how to talk about these issues in a world that's often not ready to hear what we have to say. If you have questions for Monica, give us a call, 888-318-7884.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
I don't like looking back. I prefer to look forward and keep moving forward. There's plenty to cover. I do a lot of research and try to dig out the bits and pieces of a life or of an agenda that people don't want to talk about.
The World Over with Raymond Arroyo. Tonight, 8 Eastern on EWTN Radio and Television.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Good morning, Sydney, Australia. Thanks for loaning us one of your finest representatives. As a matter of fact, we really do think one of the world's finest representatives of presenting the Catholic faith in a way that's understandable to the world, not always acceptable to the world, but understandable to the world because articulated in charity and in great faith. Monica Dumit is our guest. Who does public policy for the, you've done a lot of things for the arts. You were the spokesperson for the Archdiocese at one time, weren't you?
Yeah, still am. And I take on some spokesperson role as well. Yeah.
Oh, okay. We got a bunch of folks on the line for you.
Wonderful.
Shall we? All right, let's go to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Do you know where Louisiana is? Do you have any idea where that is in the United States?
My geography is terrible.
All right. Well, maybe Mark doesn't know where Sydney is either. I don't know. Mark, in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, which is in the southern part of the United States, just east of Texas, down by the Gulf of Mexico, listening on 105.3 FM. Mark, thank you very much for your call. Go ahead with your question for our guest, Monica Dumit.
Yeah, so my wife and I have 4 kids, and we've seen Finding Nemo, so I have a general idea of where it sits in Australia.
That's good, but you watch all the important films. That's good, Mark.
That's correct. Just in alignment with what you're saying, my question is really about the contrast and comparison. We see a lot of major organizations here in America that are supposedly Catholic or attached to the Catholic faith or church in some way, especially like the medical field right now, that are not or allowing or performing services that are not in alignment with Catholic teaching. And we have Catholic universities and schools doing the same kind of things where they're allowing this publicly and even proclaiming that this is what they do and advertise and promote it, especially some of the medical systems and hospitals we've seen. Is that something that's happening worldwide? Is that something y'all are seeing as well? Is that something unique here to America that we need to calibrate and change? Or is that something that just worldwide we're seeing these Catholic institutions or self-proclaimed Catholic institutions not following the teachings of the church?
Great, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, boy, you're going to get me into trouble, Mark. Buddy, here we go. Yeah, look, we are seeing the exact same thing in Australia. Thanks be to God, not as much in the medical field. You know, our Catholic hospitals, our Catholic aged care facilities and things like that are still pretty faithful. Although you'll get the odd report that things are happening there with that aren't in line with Catholic teachings, but it's not as overt as it is in some of our other organizations. The schools you mention are obviously one of them, and our social services agencies, some of them can be quite problematic. And I won't name them, but one of our big social services organizations, just a couple of years ago, the bishops put out a statement on religious liberty, and this particular Catholic organization put one out that contradicted what the bishops had to say. So there are always fun days in the office. And I think, and Sina, we're talking about this offline a little bit, but one of the big problems I think is that our big institutions have, at least in Australia, outgrown the footprint of the church. And so we, you know, our schools in Australia educate about 800,000 kids, and we have about 100,000 staff attached to them. And those 900,000 alone are way more than the number of practicing Catholics in the country. And then not to add all of those who staff our hospitals and aged care facilities and social services agencies and chanceries and everything like that. And so I think that our institutional footprint is big, which is in some circumstances wonderful and something that we see as a sign of strength. But that also means that given their size, the Catholic commitment or affiliation in them has declined.
So you're saying Catholics are the minority in some big Catholic institutions, like schools, like Catholic schools?
In some schools, yeah.
Yeah.
And certainly practicing Catholics would be the minority in a bunch of Catholic schools.
Is that what you were expecting, Mark?
Oh, well, I just was hoping to hear maybe it wasn't as bad as some of the things we see here in America, especially like that in our hospital systems where, and in the schools where you think that would be a great arm and avenue for us to carry out the Great Commission and to reach people coming up in the faith and have an opportunity to bring people to God in that way and into the faith that way, when we're not employing the people who believe those things and we're not teaching those things and holding true to those things, we're actually working against ourselves. And it seems kind of like, you know, it seems ironic, I guess.
Boy, you are right on it, Mark, I think.
Yeah, and look, but, you know, thanks be to God, you've got four kids that you and your wife are forming well there at home. One of the things that I find really sad is now I'm sort of part of my job is to fight on the religious liberty side and to ensure that our Catholic institutions are still able to preference Catholics for employment and Catholic students for enrollment, because that's one of the things that various governments in Australia want to take away. They want to take away our ability to say, well, if you're a Catholic school, then your teachers should also be Catholic and your students should also be Catholic. And unfortunately, that's a fight that we gave up voluntarily some decades ago in some pockets. And so it makes the religious liberty argument very difficult, because we haven't availed ourselves of the liberties that we've had for so long. We took them for granted.
Yeah. I wonder if, and Mark, I'd be interested in your view on this too. There was a period where there was an easy accommodation between Catholic values and the values of the society. They were so similar that you didn't feel that they were, there wasn't a great stark contrast. And so we took the government money for schools and hospitals and universities and Catholic charities and all that. And now we find ourselves in a situation where the values are diverging more and more starkly every year, but we're in the position where we took the money, we've got the big institutions, and whose values will they follow now?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very hard to give that up.
It sure is.
And that's not only a financial thing, but also you're employing a lot of people. So that's a lot of people out of work for a principled stand. So,
yeah, it's very hard. I'm sure it's very hard for bishops to look at big institutions in their diocese and go, that's not Catholic anymore. We're going to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
But as the divisions become more stark, they're just going to have to make choices. Mark, did you want to add anything?
Well, I just think here in Louisiana, which we have a large Catholic population, so we have been able to be what we call culturally Catholic. You know, just it was everyone we around us was Catholic as well, so we didn't have to be ever get challenged on the actual faith. We could just say we were Catholic, and everyone just took that as an okay answer. And like you just said, as we move forward, we're all going to have to make a decision here shortly.
Yeah.
And I don't think the bishops need to say that this is no longer Catholic so we can let it go. They need to say this is no longer Catholic. Now we need some correction. Now we need the proof. Now we need to utilize the faith to bring people back into alignment, that we don't give up the fight, that we have to finish the race. And I think that's a critical difference, that we can't bury our head in the sand and prepare for a slow downfall of Catholicism. We have to prepare for the rebirth and moving forward in a new evangelization. I think we've done a lot of retreating for a long time, and that has to stop.
Mark, well said. What time is your radio program on? Because you're very good at this, Mark. Thank you. And it was gracious of you to talk to Monica, despite the fact that she insulted American bacon. I'm going to go on to Woody in Nebraska. Do you have any idea where Nebraska is?
Are we going to do this for every question?
I'm going to do it for every state. If I say Hawaii, you're going to know where that is. Woody in Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. Monica Dumit's happy to talk to you, despite the fact she doesn't know where you are.
Thank you for taking my call. My wife and I are going to be blessed with a trip to Australia later this year. And we like to take time to go around and visit some of the Catholic churches and sites. And I'd like to know if you could give me a good resource of where we could research or give us some recommendations on some religious sites that we might want to visit that are important to our faith.
Oh, look, absolutely. So I don't know whereabouts you'll be going, but, you know, I'm a little bit biased, but I think St. Mary's Cathedral is probably the most beautiful cathedral in the world in Sydney. And it happens to also now have the tomb of the late Cardinal George Pell, which I think will.
It?
Yeah, he's buried in the crypt.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Is that the cathedral with a different front than back? It's kind of. Or am I thinking of a different church in Sydney? We got to take a break. So sure. I'll ask you during the break, because I may be thinking of a different church. We'll get some more sites for you to visit when you go to Australia, Woody, when we come back. Our guest is Monica Dumit. We're talking about the Catholic faith, its status in Australia. If you have questions about that, 888-318-7884. This year, the Catholic Answers Conference turns its attention to the question of God in an age of unbelief. Join us September 21st through 24th in San Diego for I Believe in God, featuring very special guest Scott Hahn and an all-star lineup of speakers. Spend 4 fun days with your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. Seats are still available, but going fast. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 and register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity. In the early church was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
What if the voice of your deepest doubts about Catholicism rose up in the form of a human being and challenged you to defend your most foundational beliefs? That's the task apologist Trent Horn took upon himself in his new book, Devil's Advocate, a dialogue with his own best objections against the faith that he professes and defends. You can stand up against your doubts, and Trent will show you how. Pick up your copy of Devil's Advocate today at shop.catholic.com or at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
It's pretty groovy, that music. I don't know if that's too groovy for Monica Dumit, our guest from Australia. That's some very California-sounding music. But there's a long relationship between California and Australia.
Yeah.
Because of the surfing.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Hawaiians brought it to California and brought it down to you in Australia. Monica Dumit is our guest. Has worked for and been the spokesperson for and public policy person for the Archdiocese of Sydney in Australia. We just think the world of Monica. I this is the way I feel about you, Monica. If it was like there was going to be a debate on TV and you could pick like 3 people to defend the Catholic faith, you'd be one of my 3. And I'm not even sure who the other 2 would be. So we're just delighted that you're here in the U.S. with us. Woody in Nebraska is going to Australia. Asked you about, are there Catholic sites to visit in Australia?
So, well, like I said, the cathedral is my favorite. You'd have to go see Australia's just got one canonized saint, St. Mary of the Cross MacKillop, and she's buried in North Sydney. And so there's a beautiful sort of a shrine and museum there to take a look
at. She hasn't been a saint very long, has she?
No, it was JP2 who canonized her.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a little while. I think it was JP2. And then also our saint in waiting is a wonderful woman named Eileen O'Connor, who was crippled at a very young age, and I think was only about 4 foot high, and basically basically sort of bedridden and wheelchair ridden, but started this great ministry of nurses who would go and visit the sick in their homes, the brown nurses. And her, you know, where she lived is now a place of pilgrimage as well, and her tomb, and that's in Coogee, which also happens to have some wonderful beaches. But they're all in Sydney, and so if I give you somewhere in another state as well, there's Panola is where St. Mary of the Cross started the first Catholic schooling and all of that. So that's a really beautiful place to visit, and it also has the benefit of being along a really beautiful coastal drive, which just has some of the most magnificent and beautiful coastal views that I've ever seen, the Great Ocean Road. So that'd be my suggestion. But if you want to send an email into the program, I'm happy to trade details and give you some more tips and some ideas.
You can get the direct tour advice from Monica Dumit. You can send us an email at radio@catholic.com. Anybody can, anytime, radio@catholic.com. Woody, is that all good for you?
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the call. Another call from Nebraska. Tom, listening on KVSS, that's Spirit Catholic Radio as well. Tom, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Monica Dumit.
Okay, my question is this. I had always assumed that Australia had a law, had a constitution or whatever that was similar to England, the United States, Canada, Ireland, all the English-speaking countries. Is it really true that the government could just come in and take a hospital? Or do they do this illegally?
Yeah, look, it sounds extraordinary. They had to pass a law to enable them to do it. What our constitution says is that you can't pass a law that would restrict the free exercise of religion. But our High Court, which is the equivalent to your Supreme Court, has interpreted that very narrowly to say that it's only where the law has the direct intention of restricting the freedom of religion that it would be struck down, or it could be struck down. And I guess with the government saying, well, no, that might be a byproduct of what we're doing, but what we're really doing is trying to streamline healthcare here. The advice we've received, I guess, is that a constitutional challenge would be unsuccessful. That's not to say that one shouldn't be mounted, and certainly there are at least some in Australia who think that we should try anyway to take this matter to the High Court. But yeah, it from some of the advice at least we've received, it doesn't look like it's unconstitutional. We don't have the robust protections for religious freedom that you do in this country, and we definitely don't have a First Amendment or anything equivalent to that, which is something we're really disappointed about, because I just admire the free speech you guys get to enjoy over here.
Okay, Tom?
Yeah, that's very interesting. Thank you very much.
Interesting and disappointing a bit. I mean, it is. You think of a place like Australia, I guess we as Americans, we probably think in terms of that there are certain basic civilizational standards, and seizing hospitals from religious people kind of falls below what you would expect from a highly functioning society. It doesn't seem to meet the standard.
Or locking down your communities for months and months on end, but that's a whole other program, Simon.
Okay. All right. There we go. I see what you're saying. Yeah, right. I guess we're testing a lot of lines these days. One of the lines, and I'm going to go back to callers. The number is 888-318-7884. Mike in Boston, you're next, so hang on. Don't go anywhere. But I do want to ask this question. One of the lines that has been crossed in Australia that we are very concerned will be crossed here is laws regarding confession. And I know we've talked to you about this before, but I want to bring it up again. Tell us what the status of a priest hearing a confession in Australia is now.
So in all states and territories, except my own, thanks be to God, New South Wales is safe. But in every other state or territory, they have passed a law that requires people to report when they think a child has either been harmed or is at risk of harm. And depending on which state you're in, it can be even be emotional or psychological harm, so not necessarily just linked to physical or sexual abuse. So there's a requirement to report that. And those laws in the past had a carve out for information that's received in the context of a religious confession. But that carve out has now been scrapped. And so if a priest was to obey the law, then they would be required to report that to the authorities. And again, depending on which state you're in, the highest penalty could be up to 21 years imprisonment for failing to comply with that law.
Do they know that the priest cannot comply with the law? I mean, do you think that that point has been made adequately to the lawmakers, that it's not a matter of, okay, you know, well, we'll make this law in 21 years in prison, so they'll comply. Do they know that a priest can't comply? That's I mean, even if he did, it would be the end of his priesthood. He can't function as a priest anymore. So are they aware of this?
They're aware of it. And I don't think they care, because I don't actually believe they're looking to punish the priest in the confessional. What they're looking to punish, in at least from my perspective, is the intention. So I'll give you an example. If we go to Melbourne City Council, they had at one point decided that they would write to every church within their sort of municipal boundaries and ask if the priest had an intention of complying
with Lord.
The mandatory reporting law. And if he failed to respond, or if he responded and said no, they had initially proposed that they would erect a sign outside the church on council land just to say that this place is unsafe for children.
I'm sorry, but that's so phony. They know it's not unsafe for children.
Exactly, right.
That's just all that is bullying.
They didn't do it. But the thing is that we get to a stage now where you're not even talking about punishing a crime. You're punishing an intention.
Right. Yeah.
A formed intention. Another one is in the ACT, and we've spoken about the ACT a lot. On the same day that they changed their mandatory reporting laws, they also changed the education regulations and basically said that you have to demonstrate your compliance with these mandatory reporting laws. And if you don't, your accreditation could be at risk. And so you just know the next Catholic school that goes up for accreditation will be asked, do you take your kids to confession during school hours? And if the answer is yes, their accreditation is at risk. And so what does that do? That strips the priests and the sacramental life out of the schools. And so, like I said, I think they're aware that priests aren't going to break the seal, and they're not going to be able to catch anyone in such a circumstance. But I think they will find other ways to put pressure on the church, even for having the audacity to claim that there is actually a law that's higher than the state.
The audacity of saying, no, the divine law or even church law won't allow me to do this. Mm. That would be an utterly audacious thing to claim to a real secularist. That's astonishing. But what have bishops said about it? What do bishops say to their priests? Do you know what I know that there are strategies for dealing with these kind of things, like forbidding face-to-face confession and that kind of thing. Have they considered these things, or?
Yeah, look, they haven't forbidden face-to-face confessions, and particularly with the confessions of children, there's sort of this preference to that they are done in open space, in full view of others, and so those two things work in tension. But what's been really beautiful is that it doesn't matter where a priest sort of has fallen along the ideological spectrum, from the most sort of progressive to the most conservative, all of them come out and said, you know what, we're not going to comply with these laws. And, you know, so after the laws have passed, you'll get the priest standing in their pulpits on the Sunday and just saying, you know, just so you know, I will go to prison for the sake of hearing confession.
God bless them for saying it.
Absolutely. And that's one half of it. And a good priest friend of mine, he got up and just said, and so, you know, you can take that for granted that that's what I'll do, but what about all of you, right? So if I'm willing to go to prison for this, then I want to see you in the confessional, right? Like I just...
Yeah, he's going to use that. I mean, that's a little psychological pressure, but yeah, I see what he's saying though. Does this matter as much to you as it matters to me, in other words, is what he's saying.
Exactly right. Yeah. If I'm willing to go to prison, you better be willing to show up on a Saturday morning or whenever it is.
And go to confession.
Then I think that's the best way really that we can fight against some of this is actually to avail ourselves of the sacraments.
Would you say the sum total, like when I hear you talking about it here, you know, the seizing of a hospital, the laws against confession, the various other things, it feels to me like harassment. Do you feel harassed as a Catholic in Australia, or is would that be going too far to say that?
No, look, I think that's one way of looking at it. I also take it as a little bit of a compliment, because they wouldn't be trying so hard to get us if we weren't onto something, right? Right? Like, okay, what do they say? Yeah. If they're you know you're over the target if they're shooting at you.
Yeah.
And so look, but I have to say that it can get exhausting. I mean, this is, you know, we talk about this, but this is my day to day. This is
what you deal with every day.
This is what I deal with every day. And so look, there are some days and more than others that I can get a little bit tired.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, thanks be to God, I think we're strong, and I think we've, you know, we're willing to take up the fight, and so be it.
Yeah. And you don't lose them all. You've won some pro-life battles in Sydney and other places. So there's that. I mean, but even if you lost them all, you'd still keep the fight up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's ultimately important for the church to keep fighting, because we're not just doing it for now and for this audience. You know, we need the history when it's coming to record this time in the church in Australia, around the world. They need to see the Catholics standing up. How abhorrent would it be if, when they looked back at, you know, when all of these laws were passed, if the church was silent?
Just rolled over.
Just rolled over.
Let's go to Mike in Boston, Massachusetts. You do know where Boston, Massachusetts is. I know that because you were just there.
I was there
listening on
Sunday.
1060 AM. Mike, we're glad you're here. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead with your question for our guest, Monica Dumit.
Thank you so much for all you're doing in Australia and for the faith. And I just wanted to point out, I went to college in Australia for a year. I love it, and a special place in my heart. So it's sad to hear that the literacy, you know, the religious literacy is not great, but there is an online, it's a third word, Carmelite group that is growing for lay people and religious, called Apostolate VA. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's a really beautiful thing that is growing in Australia.
Do you know it? Apostolate,
you know,
VA?
I'm a member, so I'm very biased too, because it's beautiful. It is a beautiful thing. For formation particularly.
Mike's asking a question and recruiting.
Yeah.
So what have you
Do you want to give the website? No, I haven't. I know some dear friends who are lay Carmelites. And so I possibly know of it without knowing the name. But no, I haven't experienced it.
Apostolate VA. That's what you said? Mike? Do we have Mike potted down? Oh, sorry, Mike. We didn't hear you.
Yeah, sorry. Oh, yeah. So it's APOS. APOSTOLIVIAE, and it's Dan Burke, and Dan Burke is the founder.
Burke, of course. Yeah, we know Dan Burke. All right, well, I have personally I trust him, so I'd say I'd endorse what he does. So thank you, Mike. Thanks very much. Do I have to take a break? I think I got to take a quick break. Hey, Jonathan, Jason, hang on. We're going to get to your calls, and we'll take more calls too. 888-318-7884.
Hello, this is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Keep your dial tuned to Catholic Answers Live.
In Morse code, the sequence SOS is a distress call. It's been said that it stands for Save Our Souls. Well, right now our world is in big trouble, and we're putting out an SOS call for help. Will you answer that call? St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, has hundreds of teams who share the good news with souls who don't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to get involved.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
You know, we talk story with each of our very unique guests for the whole hour, so that you can go deep with us as you yourself pursue your own story of heroic virtue, and as you pursue intimacy with God.
The Bear Wozniak Adventure, Saturday night, 6 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our good friend Monica Dumit from down in Australia is up here in the United States. She's been touring around. She's been to Boston and New York and Baltimore and going up to Los Angeles. Well, you've been to Los Angeles and going back to Los Angeles, here in San Diego with us today. And a great pro-life leader, a great defender of the truth in all its forms, and particularly a great defender of the Catholic faith. If you've got questions about the life of the Catholic Church in Australia, this is your hour, 888-318-7884. Going to Pennsylvania now. I'm not going to ask her if she knows where it is. It's one of the 13 original colonies. I'll just let you know that. Listening to EWTN on Channel 130 Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Jason, go ahead with your question for Monica Dumit.
Good afternoon and welcome, Monica. I have to say the Australian accent has to be one of the top accents in the world. It's awesome.
What are you talking about? I don't have an accent.
Crikey, what? Yeah, she says she has no accent. You have the accent.
I'm from New York original, but I'm afraid of Australia because I don't like spiders, and I know the funnel spider's there.
Yeah, so it is a terrifying country. Scared, but, no, you're correct. You are correct in that. It's a horrible, terrifying place.
Everything there can kill you.
That's okay, Jason. They'll probably lock you up in prison before you can get bitten by a spider so, for being Catholic, so it's fine. There are no spiders in prison.
When I was in the Navy, I visited Australia a couple of times. I was the U.S. Navy.
Beautiful.
But my question is, I've seen a guy, his name is Ray Comfort, and I think he's from New Zealand, but I've seen him do like evangelism. How is the Catholic Church fighting against the wokeism that it seems that is sitting all over the place? Because I get the sense that it's just like the Catholic Church. Why doesn't the Catholic Church, why can't we fight join the Anglican Church and the other churches? And because it would be so much stronger as a unit, especially in Australia and these other countries. It seems like each denomination, each church is fighting on their own. So how's that going in Australia? I mean, how do you, with all this leftist agenda and whatnot?
Okay.
Yeah, that great question. And look, I have to say, it's been a real grace. I've been talking a little bit about some of the losses that we've suffered in Australia, but one of the real graces that's come out of the losses is the closer collaboration amongst not only different denominations but also different faith communities. I think probably the same-sex marriage debate and public vote in 2017 was the first time really where we saw the Catholics, the Anglicans, some of the other Christian denominations, but also the Muslims, the Jews and others all come together. And we've kept those connections since then because straight out of the same-sex marriage debate, obviously, all of the things about religious liberty, transgenderism and things like that. And so we collaborate quite well. And I would suggest that the president of the Australian National Imams Council, I would call him a friend, as I would the head of the Jewish Board of Deputies and other things like that. So there's actually been some really wonderful collaboration. The abortion debate in New South Wales was the first time, I think, ever that a Catholic, Anglican and Orthodox Archbishop all shared a stage. So we're getting. I think unity is a really big thing. And also formation. So I think that our real focus is just getting truth out there and making people aware. One of the big difficulties, I think, in fighting against sort of progressive influences, wokeism, whatever you want to call it, is actually just ignorance, either ignorance that it's occurring at all, or the idea of, well, that's what some people want to do in their own homes or in their, something like that, and it doesn't affect me. So really trying to educate people on how this is not only a, live and let live situation, but no, these types of things will come and hit your doorstep. So with this real push and a real desire for formation. And look, to be honest, we look to you guys as well. One of the great things about the internet and programs like this online is that we're not limited to the fight as it's occurring in Australia, but we can take the best of what's occurring overseas and also help form ourselves as well. So I think, that knowledge and truth is a real antidote. And, a dear friend of mine always says that the Holy Spirit unites. And so I think he's doing that here as well. But it's a great big battle. I wouldn't say that we have a complete answer to it just yet, but, you know, pray and work and leave the rest up to the Lord.
Amen to that. Jason, thank you very, very much. You'll excuse me if I keep moving, but I do want to get everyone who has a question for Monica on. We're talking about the Catholic Church in Australia with Monica Dumit from the Archdiocese of Sydney in Australia. Well, is Sydney the biggest city in Australia?
I think Melbourne might be just a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
But we're certainly the most important.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. I'm sure everyone in Melbourne would agree with you. Jonathan in San Antonio, Texas, watching on YouTube. Thank you for waiting, Jonathan. Go ahead with your question for our guest, Monica Dumit.
Hi, Monica. It's Jonathan here. I was wondering, what did the Catholic Church learn from its impact on the Indigenous there in Australia with the Lost Generation? The church is going through that in Canada right now as well. And historically, people have a good justification for being wary about your church and working with the Indigenous, because it's clearly documented that every single country that you establish political power in, you violate and rape the Indigenous there. So what have you learned, and what's going on in Australia that you're doing as a way to not do this continually in the future again, because every country on the planet.
Well, you got to let her answer, Jen. Okay, we got you. You just got to let her answer. Go ahead. You have a couple minutes.
Yeah, sure. So thanks for your question, Jonathan. And certainly there were there's been a history of shameful treatment of Indigenous Australians to some extent within the church, but also, you know, within the state as well. And we have the real tragedy of what we call the Stolen Generation. Which is where children were forcibly removed from their homes.
Can you give me an idea of when that happened? What is that in the 20th century or 19th century? Or 20th
no, the 20th century.
Century
the 20th okay. century, yeah. Okay. So with the idea that this was about protecting them or, you know, or giving them a better life. And so and now, you know, we had a number of years ago sort of the national apology, and realizing that was a, and some of them were taken obviously and put into Catholic homes and Catholic orphanages, but it was a federal policy that was implemented, and we certainly had, we had that big formal apology in Parliament, which was a real watershed moment. So that's obviously part of it, and there's certainly a great advocacy for our Indigenous brothers and sisters, and specifically around closing the gap. So in our Indigenous Australians, I'm not sure what it's like here or in other countries, but there is a gap in terms of, you know, life expectancy, education, imprisonment, all of those things, and the church needs to be a great big advocate in terms of rectifying some of those, and not only an advocate but also being there on the ground. So I remember talking to listening to an Indigenous elder speaking during our plenary council, and one of the things he said is that, you know, alongside all of that tragic history, there's also an important truth to talk about some of the good that the Catholic Church did. And he said, you know, I only received an education because it was the Catholic nuns who taught me and who taught my mother. And so I think that we, you know, we take the good with the bad in all of this and realize that even if, you know, now probably the generation of Catholic leadership coming through weren't part of those decisions, but realizing that still we're all part of the body of Christ, right? And so it's on us to continue to do what we can to make that right. Yeah, so I don't know. I hope that helps.
Is this one of the situations where, you kind of make it sound like there's a government policy, but the Catholic Church is implicated in that government policy because it more or less took contracts or whatnot to house Indigenous children in Catholic orphanages and that kind of thing? Is that what happened?
Exactly right.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
But certainly the apology was a national apology, not one necessarily by the church.
And are there very many Indigenous Australian Catholics or very few?
They are a proportion. And St. John Paul, when he came to Australia, said, you know, reminds us that the church in Australia won't be at its best or its most fulsome until our Indigenous brothers and sisters are sort of welcomed with their gifts into the church. We don't have any Indigenous clergy yet, but please God, that'll come.
Monica Dumit, thanks for coming all the way from Australia.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. This is amazing.
Yeah, we're awful glad to have you. We also recorded a focus episode with Monica specifically on what's happening with euthanasia in Australia and around the world. You can find that on Catholic Answers Focus in the coming weeks. I don't have a date yet for it. Also, Monica will be speaking here in San Diego. And you can just check our website, catholic.com. She'll be speaking tomorrow night for free. Anybody can come. And we're really looking forward to that. You're going to talk about what when you talk?
I think signs of the final victory. So glimpses of hope and victory in the mess and the tragedy that I've been speaking about otherwise.
All right. We'll coming right back with Jimmy Akin on Catholic Answers Live. Thanks, Monica.
Thank you.